Hello everyone, this is Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 5 of the Art Scene Podcast. Before I introduce our guest, I want to just remind everyone that you can subscribe to the podcast on either iTunes or SoundCloud, and follow us on Twitter or Instagram at ArtScenePC. Okay, so this week's guest is Noe Olivas, a fellow alum of the University of San Diego. We didn't necessarily go to school at the same time together, but I met him while I was working there long ago. He is now an artist based out of the city of San Diego, and most of his work investigates aspects of a Mexican-American identity, such as the relationship between labor and leisure, or what Noe likes to refer to as the poetics of labor. Today we'll hear him speak in more detail about his work, as well as his ongoing sculpture project that consists of a 1967 Chevy bread truck called Untitled Space. And here is our conversation. How's it going, man? It's been too long.
Yeah, it's been a while, brother. Fuck, man, just working a lot, man, at USD and shit, man.
Yeah. And I think we've seen each other since, I think, before I moved up to the Bay Area. I think when I was still working on campus at USD, I think I was the last time I saw you. You were just starting the Untitled Space project that you have going on.
Yeah, man, that went off, and it was a good time, dude. It's been crazy, dude. Just a lot of work.
Yeah,
Well,
admittedly, I've been, you know, through Facebook stalking. You know, like I see your posts come up every so often on Facebook, and I've been like keeping track of like, oh man, he's just been, you know, you've been up to a lot of like really good artwork. I saw, you know, you graduated from USD, I think, since I last saw you. Tell me what you've been up to, man.
Well, artwork stuff or like just personal life?
Let's start with the artwork. Let's start with that.
All right. So artwork, I'm going through a change right now. It's kind of, I feel like I've been maturing a lot in my artwork and my art practice. I took a step away from the Untitled Space because it consumed me, man. Like it was just a lot of work working with different artists, and just learning through that whole process. It just made me grow up.
Yeah. And explain real quick what the, Untitled Space project is.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, Untitled Space is a project that, like you said, I started at USD, and it's a 1967 Chevy step van, and I transformed it into a project space. And I invite artists, we collaborate, we throw these little events, we're able to take the artwork into the community or anywhere, or, you know, you just park it anywhere and have an event. And I've been doing that for, like, the past... I want to say it was 2012, 16. It's the last 4 years, maybe five. Maybe I think I started 2011. Wow. Let's just say 5 years, because like a lot of, you know, just the concept and thinking about it and development that was happening 2011. But it was good. I learned a lot in that project. And after I graduated while I was in school, I was able to, you know, get the grant and, you know, fund the vehicle. And then after I graduated, I got a $20,000 grant from the San Diego Foundation. I did a project with the New Children's Museum and involved two other artists. And we just collaborated, had a good time in the museum. And, you know, it was more... The audience was more directed towards kids, so that was kind of new for me. Because usually I don't work with kids. I just don't. So that was a learning for me.
Yeah.
And that's why I invited other artists, because these artists have worked with kids in the past, so they know what they were doing. So I was just kind of like learning from them, but then also kind of learning about myself too, because there's a lot of communication, like what I want from the project or what does the museum expect from me, or what do I expect from the museum, and what do I expect from the artists, and what do the artists expect from me? And there was a lot of all that going on and just learning as I went. And I got really exhausted from all that. And I just kind of decided after the project was done, that was towards the end of 2015. I just said, hey, you know what? I'm just going to take a break. It could be put to the side. There was moments where I did, thought about, you know what? I might sell the vehicle. With that money, I could go travel, or I could, I could, make art or whatever it is. I could do a lot of things with $10,000. But talk to my parents about it, and they're like, you know, I know you worked so hard on this project. You just sit on it, think about it. And then that process took a while. I went to I started traveling. I went to Mexico for a whole month, and then I went to Peru, and then traveled the States, and then got super inspired to get back on the game again for the Untitled Space. But this time around, I was like, I'm going to focus on my artwork and my relationship to the truck, and how can I make artwork? And specifically, Donald Judd, his place down in Marfa, he had the whole, what is it, like World War II campsite, and he just has a bunch of artwork with two other artists. And I was like, I wish I had an industrial space. And I was like, you know what, I do. I have a 67 Chevy step van, and it's all decked out with airbags and a sunroof, and why aren't you using this, and why aren't you making work about this? And now I'm at that moment where all right, cool, I'm put all together, let's just do this, let's crank this stuff out. I'm back to making sculptures for myself and sculptures for the truck. So I feel like I'm in a good place right now.
That's great, dude. Well,
Yeah.
you know what? And let's go back a little bit. Let's when did you start making art? Like, how did you get to this point where you got to, you know, creating the Untitled Space Project? And you know, like, when did you always want to make art? Was this something that you've always envision yourself doing, you know, at your age right now, and
When I was in school, I really just did dislike school. School wasn't for me. I knew that from the get-go. I have a learning disability, that was really tough. My only outlet was art, was drawing. And I never thought about, in the past when I was a kid, oh, I want to be an artist, I never had that feeling. I was just like, you know what, I'm probably just gonna, after high school, I'm gonna, go to mechanic school and learn how to work on vehicles, and maybe I could learn how to, do paint jobs and things like that. When I was a kid, that's what my thought was of my future. I never thought that I was gonna go to the university and graduate. I never thought that I was gonna be doing the things that I was doing, and it was just basically support from my family. They're the ones that really pushed this on me, just supporting my path, because they're the ones that made me go to college. And through college, I found photography and drawing, and I just had a really great time doing that. And one thing kind of led to another, just learning how to write grants and learning that maybe there is a possible future. And it's not like you need to make money off of this art, but kind of just doing what you love. I don't make money off of this art. I have a 9-to-5 job, that's how I fund these projects. But yeah, it's just kind of all came together. I didn't never thought I was going to be an artist. I mean, I always knew that I was going to do something creative and working with my hands, but as an artist, no, I never. If you would speak to the Noe in high school or in a new middle school, I wouldn't be able to say that to you, that I would be an artist.
Yeah,
I'd be.
and you're my age. I think you're like 29, right? 28, 29.
Yeah, I'm 29 years old.
So
Yeah.
and you just graduated, I think, in 2012. So you started school, a college a little later than most people
Yeah.
our age, right? So like, what were you doing beforehand? Were you like kind of building up to it, like making art, and then built up to and decided to go to USD, or like how did that happen?
So when I graduated high school in 2005, I went to San Francisco State University, and that's when I took my first, you know, art class, basically like a drawing and photography class. And I was up there for a year, and I decided to come back for personal reasons. And, you know, it just wasn't working out for me. I mean, it was a great experience, but I just wanted to come back home. And I was in school the whole time. I went to community college. I was in painting classes. I was in figurative drawing classes, and I would take all of them. Like, there was four levels. I took all of them, and sometimes I would just kind of do it again. Like, I did the figurative drawing like five semesters or something like that, just for fun. And then, you know, like talking to the professors there at Mesa College, they're like, yeah, you should apply to school. I was like, all right, well, USD's probably my best bit because it's in San Diego and I get free tuition. Both of my parents work there. So kind of, and they always wanted me to go to the University of San Diego because it was free, but I, you know, I didn't have the grades.
Well, I didn't know your parents worked there.
Yeah. So my parents like have a long history at USD. My pops has worked there 25 years plus. I've seen that place develop over time. So wow. I have a long history with the university.
Wow, that's crazy. I had no way. I didn't know this whole time that they worked there.
Yeah. And like it was perfect because you know, I get to eat get to eat lunch with my pops, you know, when I was in school.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah, and it was cool, you know. So like that's how I was always in school. I was in school for 8 years. Like my little sister graduated before I did by one semester, you know, and like like it was tough for me to see that because I wanted to be the first, you know, college graduate, but she got me, so it's all good. But but I stayed an extra semester just to fund the untitled space. That's the reason why I stayed that extra semester.
Right.
To get another grant, and that would, you know, that money that I got was to overhaul the engine.
Yeah.
But yeah, like schools, yeah, 8 years in school. I wasn't like, I was just having a good time doing what I loved to do, was just hang and during those 8 years of school, you know.
What kind of work did you start making before you started the, you know, working on that truck?
Well, I was very much a painter, you know, very influenced by a lot of, you know, just Chicano art, and just vibrant colors, and you know, just trying to, and graffiti. I was really big into graffiti. I would go, when I was in San Francisco, I would go out and, you know, just tag, you know, like just be an idiot, you know, but that was my outlet. And as well in San Diego, I did a couple things, and I was just a painter, you know. I never really played around with sculpture at all. It wasn't until I got to the University of San Diego, I took a sculpture class, and you know, I found what I really like to do is, you know, sculpture.
Yeah.
Sculpture. I like to put stuff together, kind of like it's just that physical form right in front of you. And you, and it's not like, you know, traditional sculpture, it's just kind of like ready-made, found objects, using objects that are really precious to me, very sentimental, like family objects, and, you know, putting those things together. Yeah. Originally, I started as a painter and a drawer, and it's crazy. Like now, like doing this stuff, you know, just sculpture and a truck, you know.
Well, and you mentioned Chicano art. Is that still influencing your work today?
Yeah, very, very much so. Because like a lot of my artwork, I mean, all of it deals with identity. You know, it's just trying to figure out who am I, how do people see me and perceive me, and as well like. How, like, who am I in this society? Because I don't call myself a Chicano. I think Chicano is a very powerful word. And I feel like the people that were in the 60s, they could call themselves Chicano because they went through those those protests, and they fought the path for us, you know, for me, and that's a very strong word. I can't take on that role like that. I'm the privileged, you know. They did that, so I call myself a Mexican American, or even just a Californian, you know.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because I feel the same way. So when I was at USD, I was a history major. And I majored in California and American Southwest history. So I took Chicano history classes, and being Mexican American myself, you know, I felt the same way. It was, you know, I don't know if you had this experience, but, you know, like at USD, there's a huge, you know, Mecha and Etra club, you know, and they tried to always recruit me. But, you know, after I took like a Chicano history class, and then understanding what exactly is a Chicano, I definitely like basically came to the mindset that that you have, is that I'm not a Chicano. I'm the after. I'm post Chicano.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And that's how I feel. You know, like exactly what you said, man. I'm post. Like that's a strong label.
Yeah.
But people will still categorize me as a Chicano artist, you know, and that's okay. I don't have a problem with that. But for me personally, you know, if someone asked me, I'm like, nah, my parents are Mexican, you know, I was born in the States, so it makes me Mexican American. But if you really want to go like back to history, I'm a Californiano. Like,
yeah,
when California was Mexico, you know, like,
yeah.
That's like, it's the same thing like with Texans, like Tejanos, like they call themselves Tejanos because the capital was so far away that the culture was just different. You know, they started calling themselves Tejanos, and Californians, Californianos. And like, that's the way I feel too, you know, like it's just different cultures now.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I feel like, you know, you're right. You know, I remember learning about, you know, the Native Americans just in the state of California were so different from the Aztecs, and it's so you know, the cultures are so disconnected from one another that it's just like, you know, it's hard, I think, for Mexican Americans who have been in the state of Texas or in the state of New Mexico or the state of California for like a couple generations, or even like are able to tie back their families that far enough to understand that, like, well, I'm not really traditionally Mexican, you know, like I am of this particular land, which is completely different from like Mexico, what is the country of Mexico today.
Yeah. I mean, shit, I got German in me. I got a bunch of other stuff. I'm not authentic, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, so kind of tough to put all those labels on. And not only that too, like, I mean, I'm not dark, you know, I'm a light skinned Mexican. So when people look at me, they either think like I'm from the Middle East, or that I'm Italian.
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah.
So at the same time, like, I'm kind of privileged because of my skin, and I'm aware of that too. You know, like,
yeah. It's definitely an interesting topic, I think, that I feel like it's overlooked. You know, about like how, you know, there's this history of where, you know, Mexican Americans in the 60s and 70s were very proud of being who they are and what they are. And it was great. But I think, you know, 40, 50 years later, there were such a mix of different races now, and a mixture of different Latin American cultures. You know, like, I'm half, my mother's Mexican, but my father's half Peruvian Chilean. You know,
no way, really?
Yeah, wow. It's an interesting, and just like what you said, like, my mother, she's from Mexico, born and raised, but she's got like a grandfather who is from Poland, and, you know, like, and another grandfather that's from Italy, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Yeah. Do you address some of this in some of your artwork, or do you try, or is this like this, you know, you mentioned about, we talk about, you know, we use the word post Chicano. Like, is this something that you try to reflect in what you do?
Yeah, definitely. Like, my art is definitely an archive of my family and their struggles, their story of coming to the States and why they did the things they did and sacrifices for their kids. Like, that's all that's all, like, that is my art, and as well, like, the cultural side that comes with it, like machismo and other stuff like that, you know, like, that plays a major role in my art. And I feel like I'm barely scratching the surface right now, but I feel like I'm getting somewhere with it. And as well, like, labor is a really big theme in my work, especially like my dad, when he came to the States, he worked in the fields. And when I was a kid, I would go to instead of like Saturday cartoons, no, we would get up really early, me and brother, and we would go work with my pops and go to people's houses and clean their yards, you know?
Yeah.
That was the thing, like labor.
Yeah.
And all those little memories, like, are embedded in my art. And I feel like it's kind of like sometimes I feel like it's tough for me because it's all about me, you know? And I know there's a lot of other issues and political issues that I need to talk about as an artist, but like, I feel maybe this is, it can speak to someone else and someone can relate to it, you know?
Yeah.
Like one good example, I don't know if you got a chance to check out on the website, but there's this one piece I did. It's called a Lowrider Wheelbarrow. I took my father's wheelbarrow that he had like for, I don't know, like 10 years. And I remember like making stuff, you know, like, putting the concrete and mixing the concrete in there in order to make like the fence for our house. But I took that one and, like, you know, this whole like Chicano lifestyle of lowriders, and I took a lowrider bike, took that apart, you know, put the front end, the fork and the spoke wheels in the front of the wheelbarrow, and then put a chain steering wheel in the back.
Yeah.
You know? And like that for me, that tells a story right there. Like, you know, just like, you know, yep, it's leisure, it's labor, but there's also leisure. You know, this is, it leaks in our life and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I did see that piece. It was pretty good. You know what I do remember too? I think so I guess to provide a little bit of context to our listeners. So we mentioned before, both of us, we went to the University of San Diego, and yeah. And both of us, I was a minor in visual arts, so. I almost double majored, but not quite. But I hung out just as much I spent just as much time as you probably had in what we call the basement society, in the basement of Camino Hall, which is where our art department was at. But, you know, it was, you know, the art gallery on campus is in another, it's in this fancier foyer of a building that's across the way from like a French parlor room, right? And yeah. I remember that, you know, they would always have exhibits of like fine prints, you know, from the Renaissance period, but they would always open it as a section of it for the current students to exhibit some of their work in response to whatever was being exhibited at the time. And I think there was a Goya show, and you had a piece in there, and it was of the crucifixion. But it was like it was etched in wood or something like that. Do you remember that piece?
A crucifixion. Was it a print or a sculpture?
I think it was a print, but it was like in a wooden frame.
In a wooden frame.
Yeah, and or not the crucifixion, but Jesus in it. Jesus.
Was it lit up?
Yes, it had like a light, yeah. Like a light box.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny. I work at the University of San Diego, and I still work with the University of Design. And one of my, it's kind of interesting. They actually bought it, and you know, I have to clean it up here and there. I'm cleaning up my own artwork. That's interesting, but that's cool. That's cool. But yeah, that you know, I still look at that piece, and it's called Antes, or I think it's called Antes. Hold on. Oh, was it Antes y Después, or I don't know what it was. Something like before and after. And I look at that piece, I'm like, wow, like, this is, you know, this shit's still going on, you know, like, before, you know, before this call, like, I was, you know, listening to the news, you know, like, they're shooting in Dallas, you know, and the whole, like, you know, the shootings in, what was it, in Minnesota and shit like that, and then you have, like, fucking, the stuff that's happening that happened in Turkey and at the airport, and then these shootings in Orlando, you know, just like all this stuff is like Goya was talking about this stuff. Like, it's just history repeats itself, man. Like the human, like brutality and survival and hate and crime and control. And that's what that piece was all about. You know, like this suffering is going to happen. And Goya just did such a great job, like depicting that in those prints. And those prints were, like, he wasn't able to show those prints for a while, I think. Right.
Yeah.
And that's true. Because like he would get in trouble, you know, and he would probably get crucified himself. Yeah. But he was documenting something that, like, this is just the nature of the world, and it's kind of sad, and, you know, we're still going through it right now. But, yeah, that piece was – I think it was the first piece, the first print of that collection. I forget what it's called, but it's this guy that's kneeling, and behind him is the crucifix. It just lit up. But yeah, I do remember. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. Well, I know you've been involved too in Chicano, with Chicano Park. I believe there's like an art space down there or something that you used to be involved with, right?
Yeah, it was called Voz Alta. And Voz Alta was this small little gallery, humble space. And it was in downtown at first, and then they moved to Chicano Park. And Chicano, or that Logan Heights, Barrio Logan area, was, you know, still, you know, kind of hood, you know.
Yeah.
When they moved in there, and I helped out, you know. I was the intern, you know. I did the wall prepping, hanging artwork, selling beer, stuff in the back, you know. And that created a movement, man. Like, that started creating a movement. People that were part of that group, you know, started to branch off and do their own thing. You know, there's another space called La Bodega, and then, you know, then from there, like taco stands, La Salud, start opening up, and then there's like a Border X brewery down there now. And like on Thursday nights at Voz Alta, we would have this thing called Latin Jazz Night. And this guy, he's like a legend in the community of San Diego. His name is Bill Caballero. And he would bring in these like amazing Latin jazz musicians from all over the world. And they just jam out. Like right now they're jamming out at Border X Brewery. But Voz Alta was really important for that community, because that it brought, like, it made people aware of like how great, you know, things are, you know, in that area. But little by little too, like, that area started being gentrified, you know, like, mm-hmm. People start buying houses, property starts going up. So that was kind of interesting. People start catching on and start making, you know, creating a business out of it. But Voz Alta never had those intentions at all. It was like, yeah, more community based. And that's like Voz Alta, like that internship, that's where Untitled Space, you know, was born, you know, was,
yeah,
started to create. And, you know, like, my intentions was, you know, like, hey, I just want to help out artists. And like, I enjoy being with artists, hanging artwork, painting, you know, mm-hmm. Creating a community. And that's what it was. You know, you'd have people, you know, from different economic levels. And it was crazy. You see, like, a homeless, you know, yeah, you give them a beer. And then you see a lawyer. And then, like, they're all talking, having a good time, you know. Like that's what's up. And then, like to a point, like, you know, let's go all go to the back and smoke some pot. Like,
yeah.
And that's what I really enjoyed about Voz Alta. And it's kind of interesting that you brought that up, because, like, Voz Alta doesn't exist anymore. They've moved on and started a radio show at the Bread and Salt. It's called Radio Pulso del Barrio. And they have a little segment called Everything Out Loud. But it's just like they just – it's more of a music thing. They're not necessarily doing art stuff, but I recently communicated with Carlos Beltran, which was the, you know, creator and owner of Voz Alta. And, you know, I was like, hey, Carlos, you know, like, it's really funny that I go to Logan and I hear them talking about Voz Alta. And I'm like, but they don't do any tribute to you. Like, where's the loyalty at? You know, I was like, sabes que, wey, let's use my truck. Let's do, I want to honor you, man. Like, I want to, like, let's do a show in your truck, man. And he was really stoked. He was really stoked about the idea, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. I, you know, that's the, you know, since moving up here in the Bay Area, that's the one thing I miss, man. And I wish when I was down there, you know, I was more a part of it, but I used to hear it from you, you know, about Voz Alta, you know, and back when, you know, I was still creating some, you know, photographs and still doing work, you know, I remember used to invite me to, like, if I ever wanted to show anything there. But, you know, I miss that. I miss Barrio Logan. I miss going down there. I miss the Mexican-American culture there in San Diego. I mean, there's Mexican Americans up here, but it's not the same, you know, because we're not next to a border up here, you know. You don't get the same stuff, and I'm glad that it's thriving even more than when I was there, you know. And let's talk about the truck again, because you brought up the truck, and you brought it up at the beginning, but I wanna talk more about, like, you know, the conception of it. You know, why you started doing it, you know, and what was going through your mind when you started, you know, started making it. And because sure. I've seen some pictures, you know, so, you know, I follow Allison Weiss, who is one of the professors at USD, and she, on Instagram, and she always is posting up pictures of you working on that truck, right? And that truck has gone through so many different stages of its life. Since I last saw it, you know, I think the first time I saw it was when you put it on campus and you were making prints out of the truck or something. Yeah. Or you were pulling like a trailer that went wrong with it or something like that.
Yeah, well, the whole like conception of the truck was, like I said, Voz Alta. And I didn't think it was going to be reality, you know. Like I talked to Allison about it, and she's like, on the real, she was like, good luck, Noé. I'm like, what? like that? Like, you don't believe in me? And like, that summer, we had an opportunity. She came up to me. She's like, hey, Noé, like, there's this grant opportunity that I think you should apply to. It's called the Keck Fellowship Grant. You know, basically, you work for me, and you get $2,000, you know, and you propose a project. And, you know, you could, you know, basically, you know, at least purchase the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, cool, you know, like, all right, let's, you know, I was scared, man. I was scared because I knew that this project was a lifetime project, you know, like, I was super hesitant about it. And I knew, like, the mechanic side of it, too. Like, I knew it was going to be a pain in the ass. Like, I'm going to get an old vehicle I don't even know how to work on. I'm going to have to learn how to be a mechanic. And I bought it. I brought it back to the, you know, I bought it up in Joshua Tree, brought it, me and my pops went up there, picked it up. He drove it down, and I swear to you, man, I thought my pops was going to die that day. Yeah, we were going down the freeway, and you see, like, a big trailer pass by, and you see him, like, God. The wind just push him, you know, and, like, you know, the California hills.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's dangerous. And I was like, man, you know what, man, if this project kills my pops, like, damn, this shit sucks, you know?
Oh, my God, yeah.
But it didn't happen. And we brought it back to USD, and right away, you know, I started working on the mechanic side of it. I've done a little bit of mechanics here and there on my own. I've always owned old vehicles, mm-hmm. So I kind of knew the basics, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where, like, I think where you're talking about those prints, that's where the frustration came out of. Like, I start seeing myself more as a mechanic and not an artist. And I was like, you know what? I was just like, all right, how can I make this into art? Like, what am I doing? You know, like that this is art. And then I start seeing my labor as a performance. Kind of like Diego Rivera, mm-hmm. Has a mural over there in Detroit, mm-hmm. of like the Ford factories, and he talks about the workers as if they're dancing, you know, and they're putting the car together, and I was like, you know what, like that's dope, you know, like, you know, there's something there, and at that time I was reading Poetics of Space, and I was like, you know what, this is Poetics of Labor, man, like. You know, there's something beautiful about working and knowing how to work, and there's this rhythm that you take on, and it's all about working smarter, not harder. You know, like that's what my pops taught me. You know, like he taught me that lesson as a young kid. Like we're digging a hole, and he's like, no, I like do it this way because you know when you move your body this way, like it's easier just to take out the dirt. I'm like, yeah. Man, that's up. You know, like then I start seeing that stuff, and then like as I was cleaning the engine. And like, you know, just throwing out the blue rags, I was like, man, those rags are really beautiful. Like those are paintings. No, those are rubbings, you know. And I was super inspired by David Hammons and his body rubbings at that time too. And like, I was like, yeah, this is like David Hammons, but I'm doing with the truck, you know? And like, so I ended up starting framing those. And then like, as I started working more with the engine, you know, you'd pull out gaskets and they're like, oh, you know what? Shoot, man, that ink, the oil, I could use that as ink, you know? And I started playing around with that. And then like, the blocks that would hold up the truck when there was no wheels on it made like bolt imprints. You know, I started printing those out, and that's how that work came out of frustration of not making work.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how like, you know, work comes out of hardship sometimes, you know, like your frustration, your struggles, and you take a step back. And like you look at them later, you're like, oh man, that's dope. I'm glad that I went through that hardship. I'm glad that I went through that, the, you know, just like all that crying and sweating and blood. You know, I cut my hand one time. I even had the engine on fire at one moment. That was pretty crazy.
Was this all like, where was all this work being done? Was it like at your house?
This was all in the back space of Camino and the sculpture yard. Like,
On campus at USD.
On campus, yeah. Like,
oh, I had
a mission to park the vehicle and overhaul it there. And, you know, it was really, really nice of them. And, like, I'm super thankful that they allowed me to keep the vehicle there because it was a safe spot, you know. It was the only thing concern I had was, like, what the hell am I going to do with the vehicle afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, this all this work was happening in school, you know. Like, I was in school from 9 to 11 o'clock at night, just constantly working, being consumed by this vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, ignoring classes and schoolwork just for a truck, not knowing exactly what I was getting myself into. And that's how that work came in. And I'm really proud of that work. I'm really proud of that work. And at some point, I want to show it all as a collection.
Yeah,
if I ever get a chance.
Have you traveled it anywhere outside of San Diego County?
Oh, yes, I have. I've taken it. So when I was doing the project with the New Children's Museum, I was overhauling it to become more of a lowrider. You know, super, really inspired by Cheech and Chong. You know, like Cheech did a great job of putting like the whole lowrider Chicano movement on the blockbuster screen. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
And just showing off the creativeness of, like, you know, the just the aesthetics of a lowrider, chrome, the paint jobs, like all that stuff, the interior. And, you know, there's I think it's called Up in Smoke.
Yeah.
You know,
good movie.
The step van from across the border and stuff like that. So I was like, you know what, like, man, I want to like go down to TJ and get some lowrider work done, you know, like get some custom fenders for the back of it, you know. And I worked with this guy named Pancho Brincos. That's his nickname. I don't know what his real last name, but Brincos, like, you know, jumping, you know, like how lowriders jump.
Yeah.
And the guy is basically works out of his home. Like he has like so many lowriders and parts everywhere and vintage parts, and he goes to swap meets and sells them, and that's how I met him. I met him in TJ at a swap meet, and I asked him like, hey, can you do this job for me? Like, I wanted some skirts in the back of the vehicle. And yeah, it was the first time I ever took that vehicle out of, you know, the country.
Wow.
And crossing it back was really interesting too, because at that time I had the airbag suspension installed already, so I could like, you know, dance with it. I would like be on the line of the Mexican border, and you know, I would turn on, you know, I would perform for the audience, and it was awesome because I would see kids like, yeah, like, dude, like, check out this, you know. And like, there was a moment when like I crossed the line, and the border patrol person, she's like, "What are you doing with this big vehicle?" I'm like, "Oh, it's an art piece." She's like, "What do you mean it's an art piece?" "Oh, well, like, you know, I'm doing this project with the New Children Museum, you know, like converting this to a lowrider, but, you know, I'm by artist." I was like, "You know what? Like, let me just show you something." And I put on the switches, and like, she was like, "Go ahead and get out of here." I was like, oh, that was a great moment.
That's great, man. I mean, I wish, you know, I remember being a kid and, you know, I still have family that lives in Tijuana there. And I remember the weekends, you know, and coming back, and that line to come back into the States is so, so long. You know, it could be like 4 to 5 hours. It could be 30 minutes one day. But I think I wish I was coming through that line on the truck rather than in a van with my parents.
Yeah, it's a good time, man. And driving in TJ is no joke, you know.
Yeah, that, so, like, I was
driving
gonna...
a big vehicle, and like you're barely kind of getting the hang of it, you know. Like,
yeah,
it was. I got caught off, or cut off so many times, and like I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna crash, dude. Like I'm gonna hit something.
Oh yeah, and streetlights there are just a formality. They're just decoration. Yeah.
It's like you don't have to stop here, but it's suggested. But you don't have to.
Right. Well, what have you done with the truck? You know, you talked about, you know, the children's museum, the project you did with the children's museum. You use the truck itself as a space. So like inside, do you do exhibits, or like, how do you use it as an art? Is like itself is an art piece, or sometimes you also use it as a space to exhibit some of your work?
I mean, like I definitely view the vehicle itself as a sculpture, you know, like I'm thinking about it as like, you know, taking in the hot rod, lowrider culture, you know, and like all those vehicles, they're sculptures, you know, like they work just, the people that have vehicles like that, custom vehicles, they work just as hard as artists, you know, to, you know, they make these aesthetic decisions. Mm-hmm. Those things are important, you know, they're artists themselves. So for me, like it is a sculpture, but I use it a lot, utilize the interior space as a stage for other artists to do other creative things. And for the new children's museum, like I parked the vehicle inside the museum, and then, you know, used the gallery walls to not the untitled space walls, but the actual museum walls to put some of the rags that you spoke about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And the interior of the vehicle, like I invited artists to do things. One of them did a workshop, Kate Clark, that's the artist I worked with. She did a workshop with making piñatas. That was really cool, really successful. We even took that workshop down to the Boys and Girls Club in Linda Vista. That was great. And then the other artist is Sean Francis Conway, and he's a musician, and he created, like, him and his friend created, like, this, like, gadget with bells, and, like, kids would press on it, and lights would – it was really awesome, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Creating a lot of sound, and they utilize the space more as, you know, like not necessarily a gallery space, but like one was a workspace and the other one was just a very playful space.
Yeah,
and that's the thing I like about the truck. You know, every time I work with another artist, like they come up with different things. You know, they use a space for one time I worked with an artist, they use it as a gift shop. You know, another one was like a music room. And you know, the project is so flexible, and the truck can become whatever it is. You know, like when I had the truck at the university, I used it as a studio. You know, I was making the prints there, mm-hmm. inside the truck. But yeah.
How was it working with them? Because I guess I should say, you know, tell the listeners that, so the new Children's Museum is a museum that opened up in what, like I think 2008, 2007 maybe, in downtown San Diego. And it is, you know, Alan Capro actually has a big time history in creating a lot of artwork and a lot of stuff that went into the Children's Museum, the original Children's Museum. But in 2008, San Diego, they built a new Children's Museum, and that's the actual name of it. And it's the best way I tell people about it, it's a contemporary art museum for kids. Is the best way I could explain it. I mean, do you agree? Like, I mean, I feel like
yeah. I mean, the audience is the kids, and you have to please the kids. So that's why, like, it was tough for me to, you know, it was super challenging to, like, you know, get back in that kid space.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fresh out of like undergrad. You know, I'm thinking like, oh, like art is this way, and it has to be this way. But you know, like that's. Like, working with them made me change. You know, I was like, you know what, like, art should be fun. It should be playful. It shouldn't always be serious, you know? Like,
yeah. You know, and I came to that same conclusion. So when they first opened that first summer, I was part of the first intern group that they had there at the Children's Museum. And I think it was like a junior in college. And you know what? Jay Nolan, who also went to school with me at USD, was working there at the time, and he was like one of our supervisors. And most of the time, my job, they put me with kids. It was having to take kids around and show them artwork and then explain to them, this is art, but guess what? You get to play with it.
Yeah. It's a very participatory type of stuff, you know, like hands on. And the kids are going to mess it up, you know, like that's another concern that I have with the vehicle is like, man, I can't have these kids like over the dashboard. This is a vintage vehicle. You know, there's all right. those type of concerns and also safety concerns, you know, like,
oh yeah,
they're going to jump on here and they're going to fly out of there and someone's going to hit their head. So there's a lot of liability stuff. So I had to take all those things into consideration. But yeah, like it's a hands-on museum, and that's good. I think that's good to learn as a young kid, you know, to like art should be playful.
Yeah, totally. So you mentioned earlier that you work at USD. What do you do at USD again?
Well, I work in the art department, and I am the assistant of the technician there. And basically, I just fabricate tables. You know, I'm in charge of the wood shop and the metal shop. You know, I make sure everything's all maintained and up and running. And sometimes I help out students with their art projects. Currently, right now, they're building an architecture studio.
Yeah.
And making all the tables for them, you know, just welding them up and, you know, making them all nice and clean and, like, slick and, you know, just all that stuff. So, I mean, it's great because I'm always around good people, creative, smart people, and they also have the same goals as I do. You know, some of them are already done with their masters, and well, most of them are, yeah, because they're professors. And my boss, Joe Yordi, like he did his masters at UCSD.
He's still there, huh?
Yeah, he's my boss.
No way. How's working with Joe?
It's excellent because Joe and I have this, like, he's my mentor, you know, like we give each other feedback with our artwork, and it's just good to be around him and always motivating. Like, I see him always working on artwork, and it's just like, it's amazing to be around people like that. And on top of that, you know, I got facilities, mm-hmm. I got a wood shop, a metal shop, you know, like. And he that's why he's always making stuff, you know, because he has that available. And you, like, as an artist, that's just a precious thing right there. You can't let go of that opportunity. It's like, all right, cool, I need to make this because this is only going to be temporary, you know. Like, yeah. I need to take advantage of the facilities. But it's amazing. It's amazing. I've learned so much. I've gained so much being around the art department at the University of San Diego. There's a lot of good people, a lot of great professors there. The department is growing tremendously, and they're developing great artists. I mean, the artists that came out of this year, like, some of them were in the under 25-year-old contemporary art show, you know, and some of them were at the jury show at the Athenaeum, you know, like,
wow.
They're doing a great job, and they're also bringing a bunch of great artists for lectures. You know, like, this is a thing that they've been working in. Allison Weiss she's the current chair right now, so she's making those movements, you know, and the changes to push the art department even more further.
Yeah. Wow, man, I remember when she just started as a lecturer, like a guest lecturer at USD.
Yeah, art history. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sally Yard.
You know, and I'm so happy for you that you worked there, because that was the, if I ever had a place to work, if I ever wanted to choose somewhere to work, it would have been the USD art department, man. Because, like you said, like, the facilities are there for you even when you're working there, you know, the professors, like the technicians, you know, it's there for you to work on, you know. And I remember even when I, after I graduated, you know, Joe was so cool about me still using the dark room on there, you know, on campus. And, you know, I really love that, you know.
Yeah, you can still use it now, man. We created a system where alumni just need to sign a, you know, a consent form, and, you know, just for liability issues.
Yeah.
And you could come in and use the facilities if you want to. We have my friends, you know, they're alumni. They come use the wood shop every time. And
yeah.
Sometimes I even teach them how to weld or whatever it is, you know, like the facilities are open, and we want that alumni relationship in that department. Like we care about it a lot. And Allison has been doing a great job of doing that and reaching out.
Wow. Yeah, man. And I can't, you know, I tell people up here, even, you know, I went to San Francisco Art Institute for grad school up here. And, you know, some of my classmates, I used to just, all I did was brag about USD because, you know, I mean, it, you know, it's not UCSD, a big school like UCSD or San Diego State, but there's just something about the small classroom sizes in the art department, the closeness of like how accessible all the professors were in that department. You know, it felt like a family, really, you know. And I tell people all the time, like, listen, I know it's not like Berkeley or Texas or whatever, you know, but, you know, you will get a decent, really good, like, to really good, like, art education at USD because of, like, people like Allison Weiss, you know.
Yeah, like, it was just small, you know, and the smaller, it's a lot easier to create community, you know, and focus,
yeah,
and get critique.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So what are you working on now? Like, what do you got planned for yourself in the next few years?
Few months? So right now, you know, I've been thinking a lot about grad school, and mm-hmm. I think it's time for me to apply. So I'm making a lot of new work that deals with machismo mm-hmm. and identity. That kind of like it came out of a relationship, you know. So like I'm trying to make all this artwork and put into a good, you know, good energy, and using that energy for my artwork, just dealing with feminism, knowing my male, you know, privileges and all that stuff, especially being like a Latino, you know what I mean? Like we grow up with this like idea of like, you know, machismo, and you see your pops or even like grandfather, you know, like my grandfather like claims that he is the son of Pancho Villa, so that's like machismo to the max right there.
That's a bold statement.
That's a bold statement. I'm like, man, like, okay, like my great grandfather might be Pancho Villa, so this machismo stuff is definitely in my blood. So like I'm making a lot of artwork like that, man, just like how to make my artwork more feminine, trying to be more in touch with my feminine side, talking to my mom. Like usually like my artwork was all about my dad and that labor, but then I also have memories of like being with my mom when she was cleaning houses. Like I would go with her and clean houses too, you know. Like I'm trying to like incorporate all of those different aspects into, you know, these sculptures and paintings. And the most recent sculpture that I did, I'm really, really proud of it, is and I worked with my brother on this one, was we took the Untitled Space Vehicle, and we made a car cover, but this car cover was made out of like lace material, as like if your grandma's curtains or tablecloth, you know. And we lit up the space, and we had like these beautiful sounds coming out, you know. So like you have this masculine object, and then put this beautiful lace on top. It was just a precious thing, and that's where like that all kind of sparked for me. Is like, you know, I want to make more precious work, you know, more not like beautiful, but like it speaks, you know, it hits you hard right here, like in the heart, you know, like kind of like a really romantic, you know, how like all the like Spanish songs, you know, they hit you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. like that's what like I'm trying to hit towards with my art right now. Like I in front of me I have this thing, a sculpture I've been working on. I don't know if you ever had one when you were a little kid, but like the Lucha Libre rings.
Oh my god, yeah. Oh yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Oh, I remember fighting with my brother over like who would get to play with it, you know. You might we would always buy a new one every time we went to Tijuana, you know?
Yeah. And like I was in Mexico City, and one of the things on my bucket list, you know, like, hey, I want to go watch the Lucha Libres, you know, and it was so cool. It was really fun. But one thing was what made me what did I really see that? And then there was this character called Maximo, what's his name? Maximo something, but he was a gay wrestler, and to be in Mexico, you know, like knowing that it's super Catholic, and like people were they accepted it, you know, like it was like he was the good guy, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, pretty dope. And I was like, all right, cool. I want to go make work about this stuff, you know, because like, you know, that's dealing with my chico.
You know what? I think it's just Maximo Sexy.
Maximo Sexy. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I read ESPN magazine for sports. You know, he had a whole feature about himself.
Yeah. Yeah. That took me back, man. Like, I was like, whoa, like he's a good guy. And you have little kids rooting for him, but then like, he's a gay guy, you know, like,
yeah.
And I would expect like people, you know, kind of being like rude about it, but they weren't. Like, kids were cheering. I was like, this is great, you know, like our society's changing and being more acceptance, you know, towards this stuff, because it's really important, you know. I mean, especially what happened in Orlando and stuff, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? I, if I remember, I don't even think he's gay. I think he's actually he's straight. I think he's married to a woman.
Yeah,
I think it's a. I don't know if it's a character he puts on or if he's like. I don't know. I couldn't remember. You know, it explained in the article, and I wish I kept it. But he's very a very interesting wrestler and character. I think he had a lot of interesting things to say too.
Yeah, like I mean, I didn't know he was or if he wasn't, but like I know that he's playing this character. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like the whole thing with the Lucha Libre, you know, with them, he doesn't have a mascara, like he, but other wrestlers do.
Yeah.
And you know, the mascara, like that's important. Like if they take off your mask, you know, that's the end of your career. You know, mm-hmm. Like then I started like to think about, you know, like this mask as like this, like almost like this patriarchal symbol, you know, of, like for males, like we have to be, you know, masculine, and we have to oppress our feelings and all of those things. And I was like, you know what, man, I got to talk about this in one of my art pieces. And the art piece I'm working on right now, it's like, it's a one of those toy rings, wrestling rings, and it has lace, and it's the ring is lit up. So you see the beautiful floral lace, and one side you have a wrestler, but the other side you have a Virgin Mary. And that Virgin Mary is in the shape of a vagina, you know, and that's a huge symbol, especially Catholicism. Like, whoa, like, where do you get this vagina, you know? Like,
yeah,
like, that's powerful stuff right there. Wow. So, like, for me, like, I've been reading a little bit of Roland Barthes. He has this one chapter about wrestling and like, this myth and performance. And I started thinking about, you know, like, you know, machismo may be just a myth, you know, like... Mm-hmm. We take this on because society sometimes pressures us to be like this manly man, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, so I'm like, you know, reflecting on those things, but I'm also reading about feminism, and bell hooks is one of the authors that like I am in love with the way she talks about feminism. Like, she speaks it in a way, a language that I understand as a male, you know. Mm-hmm. and she teaches it in a way, like, you know, like, hey, like, to be thinking this way, it's a privilege. Like, you're not born a feminist, you know. You go to school, and going to school is a privilege, and to think this way is a privilege. So if you're gonna call yourself a feminist, you know, that's a responsibility. And the way you, like, she talks about like the first feminists, like, you know, the whole movement during like the 60s and 70s, like, mm-hmm. It was like very anti-male, but like, it should have been
Betty Friedan and all them.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like bell hooks talks about like no, it should be all about love and patience and stuff like that. Like, I know it's kind of like very like, oh, like peace and love, but like she articulates it a lot better than I do. Mm-hmm. But like, man, that her words just kind of hit me. And she, there's this one line where she talks about a mask. I was like, that's it. You know, I put two and two together. I was like, you know, this is, you know, that mask is a patriarchal symbol for me. And, you know, I have to, you know, and it deals with my culture and, you know, like, that's it right there, the research. So that's one sculpture I'm really super excited to finish up. And like also there's other sculptures dealing with the same thing. You know, I'm taking a lot of like her readings and you know, like taking certain sections, certain sentences and try to create some sort of artwork off of that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it's been good to kind of like dive into all that stuff because I never saw myself going into this stuff, you know. That's the beauty of like art, you know. You just don't know what's next or what you'll be talking about, you know.
Yeah. Well, do you have any upcoming shows or anything coming up?
Upcoming shows, I'm trying to do one in Monterrey in December, Monterrey, Mexico.
Yeah.
It's all on the proposal stage right now. I'll know a little bit more by the end of August if it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea what the space is. It's like this English teaching school where my cousin works at, but somehow it's tied to the U.S. Embassy. And like I'm, you know, and there is no budget, but it's kind of like one of those things that, like, as a young artist, you know, you're just like, you know, you just have to do it because you never know what this opportunity will lead to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if you gotta like, you know, spend a little money and like, you know, it's just, and not only it's for me, it's just motivation, you know. Like I gotta be hungry all the time, and I'm realizing that, you know, like, you just gotta take what's in front of you sometimes and make the best out of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that hopefully that Monterrey happens. I've been thinking of, so Cruise for a Cause is coming up. Are you familiar with that?
No, not at all. What is it about?
Magic 92.5 is a radio station here in San Diego. It's old school music, and every year during August, the big first week of August, they do this thing called Cruise for Cause, and basically all the lowrider car clubs in San Diego, LA, some of them come from Arizona, all over California, yeah. And they get together and do like this car show, and they cruise for, you know, for cancer or whatever, you know, for kids and stuff like that to, you know, raise money. And they get together at Qualcomm Stadium. You pay a fee if you want to show off your car, you pay a fee. There's two lots. There's one lot where like there's the most beautiful vehicles ever, and then the other lot's like, ah, that's okay, you know, you're still working on it. And I was kind of thinking, you know, like maybe I'll pay the fee and, you know, do a little art show there, you know.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would be cool. And like again, like, you know, since I'm like thinking about like machismo, and like I was like, man, I should invite some badass female artists, you know, and like have them kind of do their thing, and also like step away and not be a curator, you know, just like let them do their thing, and like see, I want to see like how people would react to this stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's really cool. That, man.
It was fun. I was talking to my mom about it. She was like, oh man, lowrider community, huh? Like. It's associated with machismo, but I don't think all of them are all like that. You know, I don't want to say that all Latinos are like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a stereotype that is well founded in the past. But I don't think all. You know, I'm definitely not machismo. I mean, I'm definitely not that at all. But like, I definitely seen it. But you're right; it's not something that should be blanketed on all Hispanic males.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, one thing that I was thinking about, but these are just like, you know, all up in the air. They're not really like set dates, but like main focus right now is just to make a bunch of work and apply to grad school. That's the main thing right now for me at this moment. Just to get all those things done.
Yeah. Well, that's great, man. Well, I'm happy for you, dude. And
thank you.
I appreciate it. And I
But no, thank you for the opportunity and having me on your show, man. I really, really appreciate it. It was great to catch up with you. And I think you're doing a great thing with this whole podcast and reaching out to artists like me, you know, like barely getting our career and stuff like that. That's awesome, man.
Well, thanks, man. And you've definitely been on my mind for a while. And you're definitely somebody I wanted to kind of introduce the world to, because I think what you're doing is really good stuff and it's thanks, unique. Man. Yeah.
Support, man. Much love.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, man. And I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take it easy, man.
All right. Man, I love talking to that guy. A true native San Diegan. We'll have to have him back on again for an update on his untitled space project. Well, that's it for today. To learn more about Noe and his work, visit his website at noeolivas.com. Also, be sure to check out pictures of him and his work at artscenepc.com. Till next time, everyone.